My name is Frank Weltner, and I am the librarian of Jew Watch, and I am here to welcome you to the world today.
Somewhere between the evening of December 31st, 2006, and January the 1st, 2007, on New Year's Eve or on New Year's Day, somewhere in there, the official count of the death toll of America's soldiers reached 3,000 dead. Now, these are 3,000 men and women from the United States of America who died, basically, in a war for Israel that was concocted in the White House by the Judeocons, people like Wolfowitz, Fleischer, William Pearl, Crystal, Louis Leibowitz, and others, who had surrounded the president like a bunch of ghouls and whispered poison into his ear, saying, "Mr. President, we have to go to a war in Iraq. We must. It is our destiny. We must do it now." And they said this over and over again until finally this president, who is kind of large on stupid, actually, he's not the smartest person that ever wore the mantle of president, finally said, "Yes, let's go in." And they concocted among themselves various lies to tell the Congress and the news media about exactly why we should go into Iraq and create chaos and catastrophe, kill hundreds of thousands of people, and destroy life for many people in the Middle East and here in America, where the wives and children of these soldiers have suffered great damage for 3 years now. And the war goes on, and it's obvious that the war will never be won. And you ask yourself, well, why are we still there? But what you should be asking yourself is, why in the world do we, as Americans, even have an army? Our nation has been at war for 100 years. We started with the Great White Fleet in the war against the Spaniards, Spanish-American War, in which we captured possessions which have lured us further and further away from our own nation and what we should be doing here as Americans, which is minding our own business and staying totally clear of international involvements. Our president and one of our founding fathers, George Washington, said when he stepped down from the presidency, "Do not become involved in international entanglements. Otherwise, you will lose your republic." So what have we done? We've become more and more involved in international entanglements, which is precisely what the people who lived here originally came here to get away from. All of these entanglements, all of these points of diplomacy between nations, the building of armies, the building of a navy, and now an Air Force. These are the things that George Washington told us not to do if we wanted to keep our republic. So what have we now after 100 years of useless wars, which we have not won? We have not won a single one of these wars. I've said this to you before. We lost World War I because it ended in an armistice, and the USSR was lost to leftist Jews who took many of the small states of Europe with them. World War II was an end game. The USSR stole Poland and half of Europe, and one of the reasons we went to war was to save the democracy of Poland. We also lost Hungary and Czechoslovakia and 10 or 12 other nations, including Bulgaria and Hungary, Yugoslavia, all of them swallowed up by the Soviet regime, which was a Jewish regime. Was run by a small minority, the same minority that runs IPAC here in the United States and uses IPAC and its money to control America, the same way that the Soviet Presidium control that nation, and told the majority what to do. In 1947, 2 years after the war ended, China kicked America out, and America has been out of China ever since, although now we're sort of friendly with them. Of course, we would never put troops there again because China wouldn't let us, because they've learned their lesson of colonialism, and they're not about to ask us to come in and help them ever again. Korea was not one. It was an armistice. America was pushed south by the armies of North Korea and China. Vietnam ended in disaster. We lost it, and the Americans had to escape by helicopter from the last building they controlled, which was their embassy. In Somalia, there was a disaster. Americans were killed there, and we fled. In our war in Yugoslavia, another catastrophe, and the country had to be split into pieces. In Iraq, where we are now, this is a total catastrophe. The war has been lost for over 2 or 3 years. It was lost the moment we crossed into the area, because the Iraqis were not going to give in to any occupying army. They never have, and they never will. Afghanistan is a disaster, and it's lost also. So here we are. We have a republic, and we have gone out into the world, and we have exposed ourselves to hundreds of cultures. We have launched ships into areas where we don't belong, and we have used those ships and those planes to threaten people with immolation, with scatter bombing, with whatever we want to threaten them with, including atomic warfare, to get them to do what we want. We've become basically a pariah to the world. And what do we have to show for it? Well, on New Year's Day, 2007, it was a happy New Year, all right, because we had 3,000 dead in a war for Israel, which benefited America, not one jot. And the bell has tolled for 3,000 of America's non-Jewish soldiers who died in a war for Israel, which has nothing to do, really, with the United States. The Judeo-Con takeover of America, especially its occupation of the White House, was accomplished without firing a single shot. It was done with money and with media. And the control of banking and of media and of other business concerns by the Zionists, who are a very, very small percentage of the people that live in America. And this Judeo-Con takeover of America has resulted in slaughter. Years ago, Henry Kissinger, one of the first Zionists that really made it big time in the modern White House under Nixon, termed soldiers as cannon fodder. He could have cared less about those soldiers. And today he can care less about them also. He considers them all expendable. And they are just pawns in a chess game. The president, of course, has to stand up and tell the American people, "Oh, I feel so sorry for these soldiers. I want to tell every family that I feel their loss very, very deeply." Well, as a matter of fact, I don't believe he feels anything deeply. In fact, the president, if anything, looks like a deer caught in the headlights. He has a kind of frightened look, his eyes kind of bulge. I consider him to be one of the most dishonest presidents that has ever worked in the White House. That whopper of the weapons of mass destruction was followed by one lie after another. Right now, I believe they're lying about the number of people who have died in Iraq. I think the number is probably more like 12,000, but we're never going to know. It seems that the policy there is, if you can get the dying man onto an airplane and up in the air, even if he's only 2 feet off the ground, then he does not count as a war casualty. Or if he dies at the Air Force Hospital, close to Kaiserslautern, where I was living for quite a while, 40 years ago, at the air base there, which has a hospital, and in Wiesbaden, they can just count them as somebody who died not during the war, but just simply died while they were in the army, and they don't count for the war. So many, many people who study this sort of thing say that about 12,000 have probably died, and a lot more than that have been wounded. And the wounds are very, very serious this time because these improvised explosive devices are extremely powerful. they might have 5 to 12 cannon rockets tied together and blown up at once. And if a tank even is going over that particular bomb, it will completely ignite the tank and everybody in it will burn to death within seconds. It's not a very nice death to be caught inside of your own coffin where you can't get out and where you've been stunned. Hopefully they're stunned enough they don't even know what's happening. I think we have to take note of the stage at which America is after the year 2006, and I want to speak on that right now for just a little while. I think that 2006 was an extreme disaster for America. So was 2005 and 2004. Every year that this president has been in power has been a catastrophe. We have decided to give up our Constitution for our military empire. In other words, we have jettisoned our nation in favor of involvement all around the world. And what has happened to us is that we have given up our republic. And just like President Washington warned us, we have traded involvement internationally for our freedom and our republic and our Constitution. We have literally lured people to come here to possibly kill us, although they haven't come here to do it yet. There was the 9/11 attack. But what do you expect when you go out and you completely inundate other people's areas? When you sleep with pigs from Israel and begin to act like them? By that I mean that you begin to kill people and torture them. Open up places like Guantanamo, run prisons like Abu Ghraib, and even take people and send them to Syria or into Eastern Europe where they can be summarily tortured without the United States being identified as the people who are doing the torturing. Of course, anytime you do something like that, you send a soldier out, for instance, outside of your country specifically for torture, it's the same as if you did it yourself. But they're trying to use this little charade as a way of hiding the torture, but they have been found out, and you have to ask yourself, how many other torture chambers and prisons around the world have we not heard about? Are we sending perhaps some of them to China? Are we sending some of them to Japan or to Argentina? We have no idea where they're being sent because they simply won't tell anyone. And it's only a leak here or there that allows people to find out. If you come to Jewwatch, you can read up on the war and find many of the lies that they've told about the tortures and how those lies have been exposed over and over again. You just follow the breaking Jewish news and go to the area where it gives more previous news stories, and if you nose around there, you will find 20, 30, 40, maybe even 200 stories on that specific topic. Just read through the headlines and then click on them, and it will take you to the newspaper where those stories were found. Well, as you can tell, I'm pretty much disgusted with what has happened in America recently. I feel like our country is going to hell in a handbasket. And it's not just Iraq. There was the genocide in Darfur, which I think in Darfur we're going to try to get involved there, which I don't think we should because I think we're already overextended. And then there is hell in paradise over in the Palestinian Authority where the people there have been destroyed by the terrorism that's been incited upon them by the Israelis. In addition, here in America there was some terrorism in a Pennsylvania farm where an insane person, obviously he must have been insane, he decided to attack a schoolhouse of Amish and ended up killing some girls there. It was a very tragic thing. And you have to ask yourself, what would make a person do that? But we really don't know. Saddam and hundreds of others have died in Iraq this year, all at the hands of their American occupational forces and executioners. And the fact is that we went into a country that was fairly prosperous and was democratic and secular, which is what we wanted in the Middle East. We even used that country to attack the Islamic Republic of Iran. We paid them to attack. Millions of lives were lost. But that wasn't enough. After that stopped, then we attacked Iraq ourselves and pretty much neutralized that country and made everybody there miserable. Actually, the authorities say that 2.5 million people have died since the beginning of the Kuwait invasion and our reaction to it. The Bush administration has disgusted the public in the last several years to the point where people are, they don't know what to do. Only about 20% of the people support the president, especially as concerns the war. And then we had North Korea blowing up nuclear weapons. We had some changes in the Supreme Court that are more conservative, but we won't know until later what's going to happen there. We've had the ethics scandals with the congressman flirting with young boys in the who are pages. Of course, they're not really young boys. They're actually adults. I think they're over age. They're of the age of consent, but it's still pretty distasteful for people to read about that, especially those who are Christian and who claim that that they're above board, and the people who have done it seem to have been very outspoken Christian gentlemen, which doesn't sit too well with the Christian supporters for the president, and it's embarrassed them tremendously. We had the mine tragedy in West Virginia. And people were even told that their loved ones were fine, but then it turned out they were actually dead. The dictators around the world had a very bad year. And Castro is close to death, which will be interesting in terms of what will happen to Israel. And then we had the 33-day Israeli-Lebanon war. It was very, very deadly. Lebanon's infrastructure was destroyed, and much of it. And at least 1,200 Lebanese were killed. I think it was more like 2,400. Most of them were civilians. And 150 Israelis were killed, but most of them were soldiers. Isn't that interesting? That when the Israelis go to war, it's civilians who die. When the Hezbollah, who are supposed to be terrorists, go to war, it's soldiers that they go after. That doesn't sound like terrorism to me. And I think maybe the script writers ought to get themselves going, really, because I'm sure they could do better than that. If you go to Jewwatch, by the way, at www.jewwatch.com with two W's, you can click on information that will tell you about the Jewish control of Jewish Christian organizations. These organizations are, well, they have titles like the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, the Center for Catholic Jewish Studies, the Center for Christian Jewish Understanding, Jewish Christian this and that, and usually Jewish comes first. Jewish Christian. For some reason, the Jewish always takes precedence in the titles of these organizations. And what you always find is that the organization is run by a Jewish rabbi or by a Jewish attorney or someone who is of that faith and not of the Christian faith. Now, these same people will tell you that the religious propaganda conspiracies predicted by the Protocols of Zion are nothing but nonsense. But here we have, in Jewwatch, the proof that the Jews have founded, dominated, and controlled, and still control, politically correct Jewish-Christian religious propaganda conspiracies, just as predicted by one of the chapters of the Protocols of Zion. And it is reflected here in the Republic of the United States of America. And these Zionist Christians who are trained by these foundations that are dominated by the Jews, by the Zionists, have themselves become Zionists. Christianity has swallowed Zionism hook, line, and sinker, including our president, who has spoken on it on several occasions. And the Christians believe that Jesus came here to save the Zionists of this world, who are going back to Israel to found a republic known as the Nation of Israel, which is basically a vicious terror state. A terror state which has spent its 50 or 60 years as a nation terrorizing all of the neighbors within its area, as well as the people living within its confines, including the genocide of removing people from Israel during their very first War of Liberation in 1948, whereby Menachem Begin, who became a prime minister, went to Deir Yassin, and he began to stab people and kill them with knives and swords, and to slaughter young girls who were in their 15, 16 years old, something like that, and they were pregnant, and he pulled their fetuses out so the entire town would see what they were doing, and they did this to over 100 people, specifically to terrorize the 400 or 500 people in the town, and then they let those people go. Go, leave, get out. And they did, and they went to Jerusalem and to other cities, and they told people all across Israel that these Jews are crazy. Here's what they did at Deir Yassin. And then a few weeks or months later, when the war started for independence, all of these Arabs, approximately a million of them, got up and left because they didn't want this to happen to their wives and children and their sons and daughters. And so they left. After a few weeks, when the war was over, they came back to their homes, and the Israelis said, well, I'm sorry, but you're no longer a citizen here. You left, so you cannot come back. We are going to confiscate your houses, your schools. We're going to bulldoze everything that has to do with you, the street names, tombstones, whatever. We're going to obliterate your memory from the face of Israel. You're not welcome here. Stay away. If you come across the border, we're going to kill you. And this was the great genocide of Israel against the Palestinians. It's interesting that a country that claims to have suffered tremendous genocide at the hands of the Germans, in the great blood libel known as the Holocaust, in which the Zionists claimed that millions and millions of Jews died at Auschwitz and elsewhere, but have never really allowed a forensic investigation by anyone to see if it's actually true. And I always have to ask myself, if this really happened, why are the Jews so intent on no one investigating the depth of the massacre that took place in Germany and in Russia, where the Germans had their troops? Because from what I know of Jewish people, if they can complain about something that happened, they certainly will. And if they can dig up bones and ashes of Jews and show them to people, this would help their case. But they have passed laws whereby anyone in Germany or Czechoslovakia or Poland who wants to dig these places up and to look at the forensic evidence can't do a thing. And I have to ask myself, why in the world, if this really happened, do these Zionists not want people to dig up the ashes and take a look at them and photograph them and say, oy vey, look what you people did. Here is the evidence. And in my mind, I have to ask myself, do they know something that no one else knows? Do they know that maybe things didn't happen quite the way that they said it happened, and that it would be shameful for Israel, for IPAC, for the bankers, for everybody else concerned who got Israel going, which has caused millions of deaths in the Middle East? It's called caused rancor. It's caused genocide. It's caused the movement of peoples from one area to another based on prejudice, intolerance, and bigotry. Are they afraid that there won't be any bones to be found? I think you have to consider that, because if it was true what they said, if it were true what they said, then I think the Jews would be over there digging right now. But since they're not digging, it opens up this question, this doubt in the mind, that, well, maybe they know something we don't, and they have a reason for not wanting people to look into the matter. And that's pretty creepy, isn't it? Especially considering all the propaganda that we've heard now for over 60 years about the Holocaust, and yet when somebody goes into the so-called gas chamber and takes a scraping and finds out that there's hardly a trace of any gas that was in the walls of that building, and if the people there were really gassed in that building, then there would have been all sorts of Prussian blue, which is a form of cyanide that would come up on a scraping, but that doesn't seem to have happened. In fact, what seems to have happened is that the gas chamber that's there was doctored to fit the story, as is seen in the film by David Cole on Jewwatch. If you just search for Auschwitz, you'll find this film, where he goes in and he looks at the gas chamber, and then he interviews the man who is the curator of Auschwitz. And the interview is extremely interesting and very disconcerting to the people who support the Holocaust and what happened at Auschwitz. One of the things that David Cole found, that he's a Jewish individual who wears a skull cap, a yarmulke, all the way through the interviews, to put the people there at ease about his intentions. He found a Art Deco swimming pool for the people who worked there. And we're not talking about the Germans, we're talking about the people who worked there in the factories producing war material for the Germans. Well, recently Saddam Hussein was murdered by the U.S.-Israeli terror states through their proxy, the illegal government of Maliki, the president of prime minister of Iraq. And the interesting thing is how Saddam's death was executed just in the nick of time. He had only been found guilty of complicity in the deaths of 150 people who had tried, or at least their town had tried, to assassinate him when he went through there in his car. And then there were just, you know, tens of thousands of people who they claimed he had gassed in the northern area of Iraq where the Kurds live, known as Kurdistan, or the Kurdistani province, or whatever they call it. And had he lived any longer, America's involvement in many of his regime's crimes would have become manifestly exposed to the world in Saddam's future trials, especially the one about the gassing of the Kurds, because the United States government had given money and gas to Iraq to do just that, to gas people. Well, that wouldn't have made the United States look too good. It's one thing to make Saddam look bad, but to make the United States look bad, that just is no good at all. Now, Saddam's death has paved the way for escalation of U.S. troop involvement. And as I say, it's ensured there will be no exposure of U.S. complicity in Saddam's crimes. Now, Saddam's allies have promised retaliation for the cruel death of their duly elected president, and you can just bet your bottom dollar that there will be hell to pay for this. We will pay dearly for this, as we have paid dearly for everything that's happened in the disaster known as the Lost Colony of Iraq. And, of course, the colonialist power involved is the United States of America. And so we're going to see a lot of bloodshed in the near future. And if these 30,000 troops the president wants are assembled and sent there, well, many of them are going to be killed or mutilated. They don't want to start a draft. They're pretty sure that might start rioting in America, that the students won't put up with it. That possibly PETA and the Green Party and these people will, who are used to doing things that are pretty uncivil sometimes, especially PETA, that they will change their focus from saving animals and trees to saving their own necks, because they don't want to get drafted, especially not for a war for Jews who have invaded the White House without firing a shot, and people in the White House who have given over their government to a foreign power that could care less about the United States of America. Israel has to know that what we're doing there is detrimental to our own foreign policy and that we're being used like children to do their fighting for them. And so these people are not going to allow this. They're not going to be drafted, and they're going to fight. So what America is probably going to do is to try to do what it's been doing all along, and that is to hire even more mercenaries to come and fight for them. Americans, British, people from the foreign legions around the world, who are mercenaries, and they'll come to fight if they're paid. And we've been using them, and we could probably get another 30,000 of these people, even if we had to go to Indonesia or to Japan or to China, anywhere where we could find people that are willing to do this, who are militarily trained, who will come over and wield a rifle and shoot people right in the face when they do things they're not supposed to do. You know, the Jewish bankers who are involved in the neocon movement were the same people who funded not only the election of President Bush, but the election of Vladimir Lenin to the head of the Soviet Union. And they did that by sending Trotsky over from New York. Trotsky was living in New York for 3 years in exile, and he even appeared in 3 movies as an actor for his Jewish buddies in New York. And he took $20,000 to $30,000 with him. Not thousand, I'm sorry. He took $20 million with him. Did I say thousand? He took $20 million with him. And the eventual payment was $35 million. He went up into Canada and he was arrested in Nova Scotia. The war was going on, the First World War. And the Canadians arrested him dutifully and said, well, should we send him and his family over? And the United States said, yes, send him over. So he was sent on a steamer to Petrograd, where the money was used to overthrow the Tsar, who was fighting the Germans as an ally of the United States and of England and of France, fighting our enemy, Germany. And we betrayed the Tsar, sending this man over there, because the bankers wanted to create chaos in Russia. And they wanted to build a Jewish state there, and they wanted to get back at the Tsar, who had kept the Jews from flourishing in Russia for quite a while. They'd already killed one Tsar, Alexander II, in the 1800s, which caused many of them to be sent over here because the Russians wanted no more to do with the Jews. So all these communists that lived there came here, and then they used their money in America and their banking wealth to undermine all of the czars of Russia, to force them into losing the Russian war against the Japanese in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And then they went in and they killed the Tsar himself, Nicholas Romanov, and his sweet little children, who did nothing wrong, and neither had the Tsar. He'd been a pretty good Tsar, actually. And they totally disrupted the culture. They destroyed Christianity. They destroyed the destiny of the Russian people for 70 years as these vicious Jews ran that country and murdered people systematically for 40 years from 1920 to 1940. And then more of them were murdered under the Hitler regime when Hitler went into Russia. Another 20 or 30 million of these people died as they were pushed into the army to fight for a Jewish system that had enslaved them for 40 years. And the murder that has gone on in that area because of the Zionists and the Jews who lived there and who took over that nation using American money to do so. One of the big bankers that sent the $20 million by himself was Jacob Schiff, who was the head of the Guaranty National Bank in the United States. And he funded the Soviet Union and the Red Revolution, where 65 million non-Jews were murdered by just a handful of Jews. And I think sometimes that the 65 million non-Jews deserve probably to be murdered and starved to death, because if you're unwilling to protect yourself, when people come to your apartment and take you outside and shoot you in the back of the head and your neighbors do nothing, and then it happens again with other people the next night and with others the next night, and people just sit there and say, oh, not me this time. Well, I think people like that probably get what they deserve. Not that they really deserve it, but if you will not try to defend yourself, then what right do you really have to live? If you won't help yourself, who is going to help you? You see, I don't think anyone's going to help you unless you help yourself. And that is a lesson that we here in America need to learn, as our country is being inundated with foreigners is the Judeocons, who run the White House and the Congress and the courts, continue to allow Mexicans to sail across the border, and they're not going to do anything about it, and they're going to make them into citizens. And when they make this 30 or 40 million into citizens, they're going to bring 70 to 90 million more Mexicans and other foreigners from across the border in here. And very shortly, we're going to go from 300 million to 400 million people. It's already difficult to get on the road, and the price of gas is up to $2 to $3 a gallon. And it will go to $5, $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 a gallon, because with all these people in here purchasing gasoline, the price that you and I pay will go up. The price of our housing will go up because they have to be housed. The price of our food will go up. And what we have here will be gone forever. And we will be reduced to a third nation status, just like the people of the Soviet Union. We're reduced to that through chaos. And the chaos will come here also, because once we have all of these people talking in foreign languages, once our economy begins to collapse under the strain, there will be a shortage of jobs, and then people will probably want to get out in the street and protest and maybe fight among themselves and say, well, I think we did something really bad here. Why don't we send the Mexicans back? Well, by then you'll have 100 to 150 million of them. Well, let's send the Chinese back and the Nigerians and the rest of them. They're not going to want to go back, so then you're going to have a potential of a civil war. And anyway, you're going to have hell to pay for what's going on in this situation. If you were wondering, by the way, what was going to happen in Baghdad after their president was hanged by the insurgent military forces of the American terror state, well, what usually happens in Baghdad happened. There was chaos, there was no calm, and 80 people were killed on that same day. And that's what you would expect, because Iraq is not a chicken country. Iraq is used to fighting for itself. It's out in the middle of a desert. People go through there all the time, and whether it's on camelback or today on tanks, you have to fight for your country in an area like that, or you're going to lose it. And they're not about to lose their country. And we are about to be kicked out of there. We are not going to be able to stay there. Unless, of course, we want to have tens of thousands of young men maimed and killed. And we're probably well over 10 or 20,000 maimed and killed already. Now, the people there have flocked to the small town where Saddam Hussein was born. And he was buried there in a grave that has the national flag draped over it. And they have gone there to see the deposed leader's grave, to see him buried in a religious compound 24 hours after his execution, which is the way that the Arabs do things, because once you're dead, they want you to be buried, because that's a part of Islamic law, and if you don't allow them to be buried, then people start rioting, and so you just about have to bury them. In Western Europe, it's not that way. They somehow hid Adolf Hitler's body, thinking that people would want to worship him if they could find out where he was buried. And there have been all sorts of history programs about where in the world the body might be buried, and people saying, well, there was a body that was here, and maybe that's him, and maybe over here is where he is. But in Baghdad, they're a little more civil than the jihadists from the United States and from Britain and Russia, who carpet-bombed Germany constantly during World War II, not because it was a military objective, because, as Churchill said, we want to demoralize and destroy the German people so that they never again will ever fight a war, and that they never again will hold their head up high, but they will be frightened of us forever. Which is not a very nice thing to say. I mean, you would think that at least you could, even in the midst of war, try to keep yourself decent, keep yourself from going psychiatric. But Churchill evidently was a very psychiatric individual, who always thought he was right, and who planned a total disaster at Gallipoli in Turkey in the First World War. And, of course, his plan for the protection of France was a total disaster, ending in Dunkirk. So there you have it. Those who saw the ceremony said that the building in which Saddam is buried was decorated in a Moroccan motif with teak wood walls. And the domed burial chamber is about 20 feet tall and hung with a green chandelier. I think it's very interesting that Saddam was buried in a religious building since he was very secular. Of course, as he approached his death, he began to read from the Quran and to quote from it. And on Jewwatch, we, of course, have archived there the videotape that was actually taken from a cell phone of him being hanged. It's a very sorry thing to put something like that on a site. I really felt kind of bad about doing it, but since it's a news site and people on the internet want to see these things, I thought, well, I guess I'm going to have to put it on. I know that's a lame excuse. I probably shouldn't have, but because people come to my site for information, I thought this is something they're going to come to the site for, so I did put it up there. Because I wanted to basically reward the people who trust me and who want to come up there for their news. So they came up there and they found exactly what they were looking for, which was the video of Saddam being murdered by the American terror state and its proxies. Now, the very interesting thing about it was that Saddam was extremely sophisticated in his approach to his death. And he did precisely what he said he was going to do. He was belligerent to the end, and he smiled just before the floor opened up, taking him to Allah and the 17 virgins or bust. Down he went. It's up there in the video, and you can see it. And if it's off the front page, if you'll go down a little bit further, you can find links to those areas where it will be found, which would be like, I believe, December 31st has it. And December 28th or 29th is when it started. I think it was he hanged on the 28th or the 29th, somewhere in there. Almost immediately after that, I was able to get a copy of it and to place it up there for you to see. And I suggest you take a look at it. One of the interesting things is the craziness of the people who did the hanging. They look like a bunch of Irishmen getting ready to hang some Brits. I mean, they're dressed like thugs. They have a black mask pulled over their heads. And they're trying to be mean to him, and he's trying to act sophisticated. And he talked about God, and he talked about going to see Allah, and that he was still the president of Iraq, and that these people were a bunch of upstarts, and that what they were doing was illegal, and that God would punish them forever for what they were doing, and that he looked forward to becoming a martyr for the nation of Iraq. And he is a martyr now, and we have to wonder whether or not he will be worshipped in the future by the Iraqis as a kind of saint. Especially when you consider the way in which the man was tortured by the United States, who seduced him into doing the will of the United States, into attacking their Islamic brothers in Iran, and who tempted them into attacking Kuwait, and then came in and destroyed Iraq's military after they did that, and even came in and killed the president himself who had worked with us, showing us to be a country that is not to be trusted, and Iraq is a country that made a big mistake in that it trusted the Zionist terror state of the United States of America. Well, what are you going to do? When you have a republic and your founding president says, when he leaves office, do not get yourself involved in foreign entanglements or you will lose your republic. And then you do precisely that, and you lie down in the same bed with the terror state of Israel, who has been torturing and killing people for over a century now. Even years before they became a nation, they were doing this sort of thing. And they started when they got there in the beginning, and they started stealing the olive fields and the lime and lemon fields from the Arabs and wringing their necks if they wouldn't sell it to them and doing all sorts of strong-arm mafia tactics to take over the land and to get people to pick up and move and to leave. When we lay down with people like this, well, we are going to become stinking like the pigs they are. We're going to become a pig just like them. And that's what we are. We're stinking pigs. We now have started torturing people at Abu Ghraib and at Gitmo, and we're continuing to torture them in foreign prisons. We're torturing our own people by removing habeas corpus and constitutional protections, saying that, well, things are too dangerous for the United States of America, and in order to protect you, we're going to destroy you. We're going to take from you everything that makes your life dear. The Arabs want to take your democracy away and your freedoms, and we're going to make sure that they have no reason to do that because we, your government, are going to take it away for them. And if you want to be against us, well, we may just take you to Guantanamo, and with these new laws that your foolish Congress has passed, we could even take the congressmen down there and torture them and do whatever we want, and dump their dead body into a culvert somewhere where the wolves and maybe the crocodiles would come up and eat them, and no one would ever know whatever happened to them. Just as our Jewish buddies did in the Soviet Union, and just as they have done in their terror state of Israel, where literally tens of thousands of Arabs and Palestinians and Lebanese have turned up missing and no one knows where they are, and where millions of people in the Soviet Union were taken out of towns and never came back, and no one ever asked, because if you asked, well, you might be the next one to go out there. And they say, come with us, we'll show you where they are, and then they would tell you to dig this little hole here, and then you would dig it and stand in it, and they would say, now bend over, and they would put the gun to the base of your head, and they would shoot you, and have another one of your buddies fill the hole, and then they would dig another hole and shoot him, and eventually the last person standing simply needed to push the dirt over the hole that the last person stood in, and that would be the end of it. And of course, eventually, after several years of being an assassin like that, these people who did the assassinating would be taken out by people who had no idea what they had done. They would be gagged so they couldn't talk, and they would be taken to another field where the people who knew nothing about their murders would shoot them in the back of the head on orders, and that would be the end of the entire scheme. And this is the sort of thing that Stalin did, and it's the sort of thing that the Israelis did in their many wars against the Egyptians and the Jordanians. We know for a fact that the Israelis took the tank commanders and the soldiers from the tank battalions of Egypt and killed them in Gaza and buried them, and that they also tried to sink the USS Liberty in order to stop us from listening to what they were doing in regards to that and many other things that they were doing that they shouldn't be doing. No one really wants to be caught doing things that are illegal and immoral and unethical, and the Israelis are no different. You wouldn't want to be caught doing something immoral or unethical or illegal. So if you could, you would stop anyone from finding out. I don't know if you go to the extreme that they go to, the extreme of murdering people, etc., etc., etc. But you could do that, and there are people who have done that. I think it's kind of a sick thing when people do that, but as I say, I mean, it has been done, and it could be done, and in the future, many, many people will do just those things to people. And if there's a civil war in America, you can bet your bottom dollar that if someone kills you, they'll want to hide that fact and bury you somewhere, and your family will never even hear about you. That's just the way of the world. By the way, in Israel, there was a break in this standoff between Israel, Hamas, and Fatah. And Egypt has said that Mubarak, the president, is going to make an announcement that there will be prisoner exchanges between Hamas and Israel, that Israel is going to give up 450 prisoners for starters. These poor Palestinian kids who have been in their camps without trial, who have been tortured, raped, whatever happens to them there. It's not a pretty picture. And that Shalit is going to be released by Hamas, and then more prisoners will be released of Palestinians, because eventually Israel is going to have to release these prisoners. It could be a year from now, it could be a month from now, it could be 10 or 15 years from now. But sometime or other, they're going to release these prisoners. And it just is a matter of how much of their life they're going to spend in these torture dungeons that the Israelis have prepared for them. These Israelis who we have slept with and whose habits of torture and of constant warfare have rubbed off on us. Not that we already weren't in constant warfare. We've always been in war. And our country is indeed the world's pariah and a terror state, which all the nations of the world despise because of our behavior. And they shake their heads and they think, look at this country, what a bunch of fascist pigs. And how in the world could they waste themselves in supporting the pig state of Israel, which has been so terrorist? I mean, these people are absolute pigs in Israel for the wars that they've started and for the way in which they've acted and the way in which they tend to elect these war criminals to be their presidents. And, I mean, I could mention Begin, who blew up the King David Hotel, and I've already mentioned him knifing these people at the Air Yassin. He was in the Shin Bet and the Irgun. He was a monster. He was a criminal mind. And he became the Prime Minister of Israel. David Ben-Gurion was a war criminal. He did things too. Almost everybody that became the president or the prime minister of Israel in the beginning was some sort of a criminal who was given the job of killing people. And many of them were innocent people. And including killing the peacekeepers who were there, the British who were just simply trying to get out of there, and they were told by the United Nations to go there and to try to keep peace, and they were being shot at by both sides, and they wanted to get the heck out. Finally they did, and of course the chaos increased. We need to come to our senses and get out of Iraq. We should never have gone in. We were a pig state for going in there. We had no business going in there. But the Israeli Nazi state, the Zion Nazis of Tel Aviv, who sleep at the White House, and who feed the president their deceptions and lies about intelligence and how he needs to do this and that, dissuaded him from following reason and of going in there for them. And now they're about ready to abandon him anyway because he's very unpopular. No one wants to touch him. And the Israelis don't want to touch him either because he's tainted. And besides, you know, he was just stupid enough to do what the Israelis wanted. It was like Bill Gates saying to a company that he did business with, well, you made one mistake. And they said, what's that? And he said, it's easy. You trusted me. And we've made the mistake of trusting the son of the Soviet Union, the son and daughter of the Soviet Union, which is the fascist terror state of Israel. And most of the people there came from the Soviet Union. And as a nation, they're not really very good for the world or for themselves. But they're not the only people in the world who are bad. I mean, in Iraq, when Saddam was hanged, there was joy in Iran and Kuwait. People were jumping up and down in certain areas, celebrating, but not too loudly, because if their enemies saw them, maybe in 3 or 4 days they might be hit with an IED themselves, an improvised explosive device, and be killed for what they did, which is a transgression and an insult to all the people of the Baathist tribe and political party that Saddam Hussein was a part of. And in Saudi Arabia, where the same tribe that Saddam was a part of lives, there was ire and anger, and they're ready to come in on the part of their own tribe, which is Saddam's tribe, to rectify things as soon as the United States slithers out of there like the snake that it is. Jesse Jackson opened his mouth finally. He had to say something. I mean, we wouldn't want Jesse to fall off of the front page forever, so he came forward and said that the hanging would make violence worse in pro-Zionist Axis-occupied Iraq, although he didn't quite use those words. Those are my words. I think it's a pro-Zionist Axis-occupied Iraq, and he said the right thing, that, hey, you know what? If you kill their president, they're going to be ticked off. They're going to come after you, and they're going to come after themselves, and they're going to be very frustrated. And the irony is this. Probably the only person alive in that area that could possibly bring peace in that country might very well be the man they just killed, Saddam Hussein. If they kept him around, perhaps they could have dragged him out of the jail and said, here, this place is totally a disaster area. Here's your Baathist party. Can you fix it? But now they can't do that either. Well, of course, there's a remote possibility that Saddam will ascend to Godhead and become a savior for Iraq, just like Jesus Christ did for Europe. And that the shedding of his blood, which he did in sacrifice for Iraq, will produce some sort of a religious sect where people worship him. That might happen. And if he were truly divine and he were able to resurrect himself and come back, well, then, of course, he could save Iraq. But I don't think that we have to lose any sleep waiting for that to happen. After all, after Jesus Christ's second coming, he hasn't been back for 2,000 years, and I have a feeling that Saddam probably isn't coming back at all. But nonetheless, his final letter, he said, I am willing to sacrifice myself for Allah as a martyr, and for the people of Iraq I will sacrifice myself in this hanging, and I will gladly do so. And that has to have an effect. It was a very gracious thing to say. It was a very wise thing to say, and it was a very mature thing to say. And he said in his letter that I am a person who has many, many friends. And he says, as a result of that, he said, people will remember me. You see, you don't understand that, do you? That this man could have friends. But you see, he did. He had many, many friends in Iraq. And he was worshipped by these people. I remember the last few pictures taken of him during the war. He was standing around, and the Iraqis had these AK-47s in their hands, and they were firing them off in the air, and he was smiling. And all he had was a little pistol. He didn't have a whole bunch of people protecting him. And he was walking through the streets of Iraq with a smile. And people were coming up to him and embracing him and saying, let's kill the Americans as they come in. We don't want these lousy European invaders to come in here and take our country. He didn't have a bunch of people trying to keep Iraqis from murdering him. So he must have been liked, or he couldn't have stood out there smiling and shaking hands and kissing babies without a big regime of people trying to protect him. If the Iraqis really hated him, why didn't they come up and kill him at that moment? There he was. And the reason is, they didn't hate him. In fact, the Iraqi people loved him. And we, the United States of America, the American terror state, came into Iraq, messed the place up, bombed it into a pulp, destroyed the electric plants, the water system. We destroyed their energy. We destroyed their oil fields and began stealing their oil for our capitalist brethren who always make money off of this sort of thing. And guess what? We were wrong, and Saddam was right. And the reason we were wrong and he was right is that, number one, it's not our business what Saddam does in this country. He never attacked America. The people who supposedly flew the planes came from Egypt and Saudi Arabia, and we haven't attacked them, and we won't attack them. We decided to use what happened at the World Trade Tower to attack Iraq for some unknown reason, possibly to secure military bases there, possibly to stir up chaos, possibly to arrange the start of World War III. I don't think we're trying to do that, but that could be somebody's sick idea of a plan. At any rate, we lost the war from the very beginning, because an occupying army really can't win a war. Because, as Britain found out, and all the colonial powers, eventually you have to get up and leave, because the people won't put up with you. And that's just the way that it is. So the United States is going to have a rough year ahead in 2007, which is already beginning as a very, very rough year. And I'll be back with you in the near future to continue to discuss the news of the world today. Thank you very much for joining me, and have a very nice day.